Hello and welcome to The Business End, a behind-the-scenes look at New York's local food system with Annie Myers and Nelson Harvey.
The food system in New York is an intricate and complex web working to feed the people of this city. The food system involves cycles of production, distribution, delivery, sales, cooking, consumption, compost, and waste. On this show, we'll try to uncover the unheard stories of the people responsible for all of this and document how our food actually makes it onto our plates each day. I'm Annie Myers.
And I'm Nelson Harvey.
And we're here to share our notes on the business end of New York City's food system.
See, we focus our attention on the way that things work, the nuts and bolts, the trucks, the trains, the people working through the night. And this week, we'd like to share what we've seen of a few new and growing sales venues for regional agricultural products in the city. And in particular, we're going to focus on New Amsterdam Market at the South Street Seaport in Manhattan.
First, we thought it would be a good idea to introduce ourselves and to talk a little about why we thought a show like this was worth the trouble. Nelson Harvey went to school here in New York, majored in environmental studies and writing, and got mixed up with environmental policy at NYU from the start. He's also a journalist, and although he's written about everything from Latin American politics to police sergeants in Santa Barbara, California, he particularly likes environmental writing. But there's always got to be people in it. He likes to write stuff that has environmental significance, but that is character-driven. Since Nelson graduated, he's worked for a farm that sells in Union Square called Eckerton Hill, which specializes in heirloom tomatoes and peppers. He works a bit on the farm in Pennsylvania, but is mostly at the market in Union Square, and has quickly figured out that there's a motley cast of characters involved in both producing and consuming the green market's product. Nelson is interested in the idea that if we know what is actually involved in supporting our daily habits and understand it on an emotional level, we will change our behavior. Nelson wants to explore the stories behind the New York food system, but not what Michael Pollan calls the supermarket pastoral format, where it's all about happy farm families and toffee-colored goats. He wants to know about the hernia that the truck driver got from delivering flats of tomatoes all day.
Oh my God.
You know, the sexy stuff.
I don't want any toffee-colored goats. I just want the sexy stuff. Okay, so we thought that what we would do in order to give the listeners a sense of, you know, why you should be listening to us or, you know, I mean, who we are, is kind of interview each other and kind of talk about how we came to think that doing this, doing a show that would go behind the scenes of New York's food system would be a good idea. So, if I'm not mistaken, Annie, you're going to start.
I have a few questions. First of all, Nelson, you were studying and writing about environmental issues throughout college, and I know you've worked on a few unique projects of your own. I thought you might want to talk about a specific one and maybe how the results of that project have affected your work since then.
We did one time when I was in school, we did an environmental impact assessment of NYU. And so we dug into all of the records of all the trash hauling and all the transportation usage and all the energy usage and all that stuff. And we put a report together. And that idea that you were talking about, that if we actually know where things are sort of coming from, and if we actually know what it takes to sort of keep our systems running every day, then we'll act differently than we would otherwise. That was an idea that came out of that project. We literally made maps of the fact that NYU's waste by the tons, hundreds of tons, flowed every single day out into this landfill in New Jersey. And it's like, it was a visual representation of you know, of our waste, and that's kind of a powerful thing that kind of has gotten me interested in since then, in this idea of digging and sort of seeing what happens before things get to your plate.
Nice. And have you worked with that, you know, have you used that information since in a kind of, in most of your work, or?
Yeah, I mean, it's, I think it's kind of the idea behind this show, you know, and I've been researching a lot of sort of local meat production issues since then, writing about that, and I think that's a big issue there too, because meat especially is a kind of a unseen kind of, you know, out of sight, out of mind kind of a thing, where, you know, I've heard it said that if slaughterhouses had glass walls, it would change the way that we produced our meat.
Speaking of which, you have some family history that has particularly led you to be interested in meat and butchery. I wanted to hear a bit about that and about some of the people you've met through your interest in meat.
Yeah, my great-great-great-grandfather was Gustavus Swift. He was a guy who was actually started as a butcher back here, back east in Boston. And he gradually worked his way closer and closer to the West, where the nation was sort of looking to get its meat as it grew rapidly in the 1800s. He became the guy who basically started the industrialization, among other colleagues. He started the industrialization of the meat industry in a way where he started to slaughter animals in Chicago, ship them in trains in slaughtered form to the East, and basically industrialized the slaughterhouse. It was his factories that gave Henry Ford the idea for the assembly line. They were disassembly lines, but and so, so I've sort of been interested in tracing that and sort of figuring out what we can learn about relocalizing from looking at the system essentially before he came along, and seeing whether there's aspects of that that we might kind of revitalize, bring back.
I also just wanted to ask about your, where you're from. And I know I've become attached to New York and to the people and energy that are here working on food and agriculture. I've also lived here since I was 13. You are originally from Colorado, and I know you often consider going back. So I wanted to ask what about New York keeps you here and particularly makes you want to work here on issues related to food and the environment.
I think New York is a, smorgasbord buffet of humanity, It's like, it's not about, it's about the place, but it's also about the people. And I don't know, that's the interesting thing to me is this. I mean, that's what I want to do in the show. I think it's like kind of try to illustrate the fact that there's much more to it than, sign the invoice on the dotted line and you've got your food and there goes the tractor trailer and, the well-oiled machine. There's stories there. There's kind of characters there, the prairies of New York are, I'm sorry, the prairies of Colorado are one thing, but you're not going to find the same level of whatever it is, the crooked timber of humanity out there. Yeah, yeah. Uh-oh, now I just realized I'm done with my questions. We get to the exciting part. Ladies and gentlemen, Annie Myers. Bum, 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 bum. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about Annie Myers. I'm shuffling my papers here. She works at the Spotted Pig in Manhattan. She is a forager. What she does every day is she goes to the market and she gets food for the Spotted Pig at the restaurant there. She finds local sources for the ingredients on the menu. She is a total jack of all trades in the food biz. She worked on a farm in Italy before she got to school in New York. She grew up in New York, by the way. She spent much of her time at school here working, interning, volunteering for food and agricultural organizations. Places like Just Food, Added Value, Saxelby Cheesemongers, the New Amsterdam Market, which is actually the focus of the second half of our show today. We'll talk more about that. And through it all, she was writing. She wrote profiles, articles, essays focused on the people that she met in that food world. And there you go. That's it right there. It's all about the people. It's all about the truck driver with the hernia. So the questions I had for you, Annie, just to give people a sort of a sense of, what you're all about. The first one was, in light of all the stuff that you've done, I mean, you're a total food freak. You worked in Italy, you worked at NYU, you organized tours of food production facilities at, for students at NYU. You worked at the New Amsterdam Market, you worked for the Spotted Pig, and you make a fine flatbread. So why are you so into food?
I think I mean, it certainly started with the farm in Italy. I just went to participate in the Wolf program, worked on an organic farm for just 3 months, but certainly at the time didn't have any particular interest in food or agriculture. I went to live in Italy, it was a cheap way to do it. And since then, kind of was eager to get my hands back in the dirt and kind of liked the people I'd met through it. And that took me on a bunch of different places. I was focused more on trade relations and on policy and always kind of related to food production and food consumption. But, kind of came back to the I would veer off into, you know, anti-free trade and more activist work, and kind of kept coming back to the fact that the positive energy I'd felt working on the farm and working on just introducing people to the idea of a local food system, the idea of knowing where your food comes from, it just makes your day, you know, it makes me enjoy my life. It's really fun to be a part of that community. So, I mean, I kind of have come in running and not looked back, but I also have really loved it all along the way.
I've noticed that too, like working at the market getting involved in food and kind of, you know, whatever, you go out to a restaurant at the end of the day, that there's like very short cycles of satisfaction in the food world. It's like, you know, you cook it, you eat it, you know, it's like, yeah, and you get all these little rewards, you know, you get to taste whatever it is that you're working with. Yeah, it's pretty nice. So I wanted to shift gears and talk about the New Amsterdam Market, because you actually worked for Robert Laval, the organizer of this market, for a while when he was first sort of getting going. Why did you want to work for him? What was it about his project that you liked, and what did you do for him?
I first met Robert because I was working for Ann Saxelby at Saxelby Cheesemongers in the winter of 2007, and worked at the market that winter. There was a New Amsterdam Market day in December, and it was one of the most incredible days I've spent in New York. It was sleeting and, snowing, it was freezing, and thousands of people still came to the seaport to participate in that market day. And so that following summer, it's something that I think has a, you know, we'll talk about it later, it has a lot of potential and a lot of, it's a really exciting project. And so I called up Robert, and he was interested in my writing. What I ended up doing for him was writing profiles of each of the vendors that had participated in the market and that were working with the market this past June or June 2008. And that became, so I kind of compiled about 10 different essays related to the market, and that was primarily what I did. Otherwise, just, you know, as usual, whatever was needed.
Yeah. So, but what is his vision? I mean, what is he kind of going for? He wants to get back to the public market system in New York, right? Like we had in the 1700s, 1800s, where these were huge public institutions open every single day. What would you say that he's sort of ultimately going for?
I think, well, and we will explain more of this, but it's primarily focused on this kind of gathering of people and forum wherein change take place. I mean, it permits the conversations to happen that take us forward in terms of where the food system needs to be in the future. And the kind of historical spot in which he hopes to establish this market is a pretty ideal place for those conversations to happen.
Right there on the port, right there on the sort of where all of Manhattan's food actually used to come from, Brooklyn, right?
Right.
Yeah, yeah. All right, well, after a break, we're going to come back and we're going to talk more about the New Amsterdam Market and sort of what we learned when we went to the first market on September 13th, last month.
You're listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Today's program was brought to you by TechServe. www.techserve.com.
And we're back.
back with ya. To talk more about the New Amsterdam Market. Annie, what do you have to tell us about the New Amsterdam Market today?
Well, I wanted to start with a little bit of background just to kind of, and I think we really want to make sure this show doesn't focus on too much little stuff, and we give it, you know, we give a bit of the idea of the big picture as much as we can. I wanted to say that the vast majority of food in the city comes to supermarkets, shops, restaurants, and dinner tables through the Hunts Point Cooperative Market in the South Bronx. Hunts Point hosts the largest wholesale meat and produce markets in the world. These markets really don't serve to distribute the products of small farmers in the New York region, but really cater to the high volume packaging, processing, and scheduling of large private companies that grow food on hundreds, if not thousands, of farmland throughout the country and around the world.
So the small farmers that you see at farmers markets and that sort of thing obviously need a sort of a different way to get to the consumers in New York. And those farmers markets actually are a pretty good mode, right? I mean, the Council on the Environment, the New York City Council on the Environment, their green market program has established something like 50 markets throughout all of New York, right? All of the five boroughs over the last 30 years or so. And these, you know, these are an incredible way for local farmers to sort of get their product out there. But you know, demand is obviously growing so fast, it's unclear whether they are quite enough at this point.
And sort of in reaction to that, as farmers markets have become something that can only, you know, they can only hold so much quantity and put out so much food. So organizations like Just Food have established community-supported agriculture, or CSA, sites around the city where families can prepay farmers for a full season of weekly boxes of produce. So that's one way that you know, farmers can get food to people in the city other than a farmer's market. Otherwise, small delivery companies have emerged and are distributing local produce to restaurants and shops that are particularly committed to local sourcing. So, you know, and those are just a couple ways. There's many things, but in that context, the establishment of the New Amsterdam Market may be the next stage in the evolution of New York's food system.
So the New Amsterdam Market is basically, I mean, it at first glance might sound like a lot like a farmer's market. You know, you've got a bunch of vendors in their booth selling, you know, in a lot of cases, vegetables and meats and all of that. But there's a difference. There's an important difference between the New Amsterdam Market and farmer's markets. There's several differences, actually. One of the things that sets New Amsterdam apart is that unlike the farmer's markets, like at Union Square, the vendors that sell there don't have to be the sole producers of the food that they sell. They can be purveyors, which are people who choose the sources of their products, sell a wide range of products, source, you know, things from, an example would be, you know, Saxilby Cheesemongers sourcing cheese from Vermont, different farms, or one of the butchers sourcing meat from all over upstate New York. The other difference is that, you know, this, In Robert Lavalva's vision, as I understand it, would be a kind of an indoor space, a public space, not just a sort of a permanent space, you know, not just a village that's constructed every single day. And that in itself, that permanence would, you know, potentially lend itself to some interesting kind of collaborations and conversations and all that sort of thing.
The vendors involved in the Amsterdam Market, and at this point there's about 80, include, as Nelson mentioned, butchers, cheesemongers, also a lot of bakers. There's a grocer from New Jersey, fishmongers, some of whom also, you know, are involved in the Fulton Fish Market in the Bronx. Different distributors, large and small, and wild food foragers, all of whom came together on the first. I mean, have done so in the past, but came together this season. For the first of this season's monthly markets on September 13th.
And we were there. We went down there. We, you know, got our little tape recorder together. And it was a beautiful day, as I recall. Beautiful day under the bridge. Beautiful fall day. And we went down and we talked to people about sort of, you know, their feelings about the market, the potential for the market,
the different sort of products that they sold. And we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to show you some of what we heard.
You're listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Today's program was brought to you by TechServe. www.techserve.com.
So, as we mentioned, Annie and I went down to the New Amsterdam Market on September 13th, the first of four fall markets that are happening down there. And we talked to a lot of people. And the first thing we noticed when we were down there was that there was a lot of excitement in the air. And as the opening market bell sounded, this is something that was that happened at the public markets through history. The opening bell would sound and business would be on. As that happened, we were talking with a guy named Gary Cirillo of a place called The Garlic Farm in West Granby, Connecticut.
This is our first time here. We're going to see how it goes, you know, and try to accommodate everybody, and we'll just play it by ear. Now, it's a long way for us to go, so we just have to kind of play it by ear.
Uh-oh. The market's starting.
Okay, I'm going to have to get rolling. Come get me later.
Oh, my. Oh, my. I didn't know I could make that sound. Wow, we were really excited there. But, you know, everybody else was also very excited all around us. The second thing that I think we kind of noticed about that market was that it's still in an early phase. There's a lot of vendors like Gary Cirillo, who we just heard, who have a sort of a wait-and-see attitude about whether they're going to make New Amsterdam a permanent part of their business. And if there were to be a more permanent market over time, there are a lot of details that would have to be worked out. One example is that market organizers, ultimately, they want the market to be a weekly thing, maybe even a daily thing. But in this early phase, some of the vendors were actually grateful that New Amsterdam takes place just once a month. Let's listen to Eric McEnroe from McEnroe Organic Farm. He had his take on that day's market.
I like it because underneath, you're not out in the elements. It's easy to get to, and it's only monthly, so it's set every week. You know, I do like my weekends still.
He likes his weekends.
He'll learn that'll change. We spoke with us, particularly with vendors who, for whom this was sort of their first on the ground venue in New York City. And a few of them told us that they were really happy just to have, for once, you know, a physical place in the city for customers to get their product.
This is a family business. This is my dad. He's the cider maker and owner. And we just threw it in the back of the Volvo and drove down. Stayed with my aunt in Jersey. We actually were at the first one of these, like, a couple years ago, and we haven't done it since. And, you know, it's... We do have a lot of customers in this area, and it's always nice to be able to provide them a way to get our product without having to, you know, take a trip up to the Finger Lakes or pay for shipping. So I guess because we're trying to break into this market a little, the New York City market in general, it's kind of a nice way to test the waters.
That was Caitlin Barton from Bellwether Hard Cider. And like she said, you know, it's just tricky to find out what the demand for your product is going to be. So she goes on the markets to just sort of explain that markets like New Amsterdam are a good way for vendors to get a sense of the demand in New York City before they really, you know, invest in plunging into the market.
It's kind of a catch-22 because when you try to break into a market like New York City, you have to be able to provide a lot of product. But in order to produce a lot of product, you have to have a lot of income, I guess. So it's kind of a nice way to like sort of market research and see if there's the interest even to bother making that investment to be able to produce more cider and supply the general area.
So for a lot of people, this is a way to sort of, a lot of vendors, this is a way to get a sense of, you know, is the demand there for this product, you know, maybe network with people in the city about, you know, potential opportunities to expand into the city. And of course, you can't really, you know, give one market too much credit for you know, boosting a business or anything like that. It's hard to say what the impact of that market that day was for individual businesses. But having said that, there are a lot of businesses, a number of them, that have been with New Amsterdam from the start, and they've sort of taken off since the market first began. One example of that is Dixon's Farm Stand Meats, run by a guy named Jake Dixon. They are a purveyor of artisanal meat from upstate New York. They've been with New Amsterdam since the first market. And Jake Dixon actually recently opened his own butcher shop in Manhattan's Chelsea Market, and, you know, that's going from basically a little farm stand, what, once or twice a week at farmers markets.
And primarily an online, you know, shopping and delivery.
Sure, sure. To a full-time thing. So, you know, New Amsterdam could potentially play a role for these guys in sort of, you know, giving them a little extra boost as they expand.
And as they expand, one of the big kind of things that I think is different about New Amsterdam Market from the farmers market is its ability, perhaps, to be more than just a retail space. The farmers markets right now, the green markets, are functioning as wholesale venues for a lot of restaurants, but it's not a very efficient system, and it doesn't. You know, the green markets are set up for retail sales, and New Amsterdam hopes to be a place where restaurants and supermarkets and shops can really kind of buy the high volumes that they need.
So when you say wholesale venues, you're talking about basically what you do for a living, right? Which is to go, you work for a restaurant, you go to the market, you have ordered several days in advance, and you place you go and pick up a fair amount of food, right, from them.
Right. I mean, I'd like to say that it was that smooth. It's also, you know, a few days in advance. No, it's often the night before, and the farmer might, you know, it's all a pretty crazy system when you don't, you know, maybe it'll snow and the farmer doesn't make it, and then and that's how the food system works. It's never very predictable. There's always going to be kind of last minute arrangements. But I think one of the things that I think can be fixed is that, you know, I'm in Union Square with a bunch of other buyers for chefs or the chefs themselves, who are battling over some, you know, the produce that's there when there's so much food that we would all want to buy, and yet we're kind of coming to this one central space that just doesn't have it all, and or doesn't have enough.
And we talked to one farmer who was particularly enthusiastic, right, about this idea. Eric McEnroe certainly open to the idea of New Amsterdam being a place for wholesale to have.
It'd be nice if you could come down and have stuff pre-ordered, yeah. And you know,
people come down and get it.
Yeah, makes my life a lot easier.
That guy likes his life easy. He likes his weekends. Sounds like a pretty easygoing guy, Eric McEnroe. But his farm is no joke, right? I mean, it's a pretty serious.
It's huge.
It's a massive organic operation. All right, so we're going to take a short break, and we'll be back to tell you when and where you can catch the New Amsterdam Market later this fall. It's the business end.
What about my boys dancing?
listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Today's program was brought to you by TechServe. www.techserve.com.
And here we are. We wanted to let our listeners know when they can come to the next New Amsterdam markets. They will take place again at the Seaport, just right outside where the Fulton Fish Market building stands. And the dates for those are this coming Sunday, October 25th.
Uh-oh. Oh, yeah.
It already happened.
It will have happened, but you can think about it. And there's two more to come, right, Annie?
On November 22nd and December 20th. So we hope you'll go out there and see for yourself.
It's pretty nice. They've got, like, you know, I think this week they've got bike valet parking happening. And there's, like, insane ice cream. I had, like, a ricotta ice. I mean, I had, like, a nectarine ice cream, you know. I mean, this is, like, pretty serious stuff. Okay, so this show you can listen to in the Heritage Archives, heritageradionetwork.com. They've got a pretty awesome system there where you can search whatever you're interested in, and it'll bring up all the shows with that, with related content. You can also listen to it as a podcast on iTunes if you search Heritage Radio Network. My name... Oh, wait. I'm not supposed to say my name yet. I wanted to close with a joke. I was online looking at food jokes, and they're surprisingly hard to find a good food joke. There's a lot of really bad stuff about, like, oh, I'm not, it's a lot of it is actually, you can't really repeat it on the radio. But here's this week's joke. A friend of mine got some vinegar in his ear, and now he's got pickled hearing. Oh, there's got to be a laugh track. We'll have to cue that next week. At any rate, my name is Nelson Harvey.
And I'm Annie Myers.
And this is The Business End.